Rosendale, the CEO of the Maryland Technology Council and partner with Newport CEO Advisors. Today, you're listening to Capital M, the Maryland Technology Council podcast focused on capital markets in the Mid-Atlantic. Our purpose with this podcast is to elevate the discussion around capital markets, identify and define the challenges that our companies face in this region, hopefully find solutions, and then utilize our combined and collective influence to make the business climate in this region a better place. My guest today is Brad Stewart. Brad is a CEO, an entrepreneur. He's an advisor to CEOs, and he's very active in the business community in this region. Brad is the vice chair of the Maryland Technology Council and chair of Maryland Life Sciences. Brad, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Marty. It's great to be here.
So, Brad, you're a successful entrepreneur. You're an operating executive. You advise other CEOs on a regular basis, and you're very active in the business community overall. And I know you're not a shrinking violet when it comes to talking about what's happening and the issues and challenges that we face here in Maryland. But before we get into that, could you just take a minute and tell me what got you to this place? Where did you come from? How did you get here? And why do you feel so strongly about it?
Well, I've been in Maryland now for 22 years, and I think it was a happy accident that I ended up moving here. At the time, I was working for a privately owned Italian pharmaceutical company that was in the orphan drug industry, still is, a company called Sigma Tau Pharmaceuticals. And they moved me here to Maryland, where the U.S. headquarters was, to establish a marketing and business development function for the company. I've been fortunate since that time to work at, run multiple companies here in the area and have been a long-time resident of the area. So I've been in Maryland for a long time now.
Great. And with respect to the business community, I know because I've known you for a few years now that you're very active, you're very well connected. What's driving you?
I think a couple of things. As I think about that, ultimately, I try and take a couple of steps back to think of what the answer to that is. Underlying it is probably the thing that's unfortunately easy sometimes for us to get is it's a passion for the patients we serve. At the end of the day, everything we do is directed to life-saving, life-changing therapies, and I want to see those succeed. I've seen them succeed, and you like to have that impact on people. With that being said, sometimes it's easy to get lost in the day-to-day necessity of making a business survive and to keep things going. But ultimately, that's a big driver. And then when I think about it in that context, if then I can take my experience or whatever it may be and help another entrepreneur in the area to do that, that's just another opportunity to help them help the patients that they're serving.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's from that perspective, it's a way of thinking of how can you sort of leverage what you can do to make the world a better place?
Yeah. And no better place than this region to do that, right?
Exactly.
So I hear a lot in this region when I'm talking to Tech Council members or other companies in the region, I hear a lot about the challenges in raising capital in the Mid-Atlantic. Now, we have some companies that have been very successful at raising capital. I think most of them that I've talked to, some of them have raised money right here in Maryland. Others have gone significantly outside of Maryland to raise that capital. And I'm curious about your thoughts on, what are the important leadership traits that are necessary to raise capital? Why are some companies successful and other companies seem to struggle more than others in this region?
I think it distills down to a single leadership trait. I think it's focus. And, that's an easy word to say and sometimes a harder word to define. And then obviously it's even much harder to execute against. But I think for those entrepreneurs, for those companies, for those executives, if they were to sit down and be honest with themselves and honest with each other, it's establishing an unrelenting focus. And by doing that, defining the goals that they have set out, that they have for the company, for their product, or whatever it may be. Understanding those goals well enough to then define significant milestones that demonstrate progress against those goals. And then going ahead and executing against those goals and milestones.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I think it's very easy to get caught up in doing, but not stepping back to say, what am I doing and am I doing the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get caught up in activity versus action. And I think those are words that have a very big difference in meaning.
Yeah. So another observation that I've had is we seem to do a really good job in this area in spinning out early stage startups. We don't do such a good job in helping them develop throughout the next stages and get to the stage of becoming a growth company. Are there things in your mind that as a community we could be doing better to help those companies that are kind of in that middle space between startup and growth?
I think we collectively can help each other, but I don't necessarily think that that's the problem, because from my experience, anytime anyone's come up to me, I'm usually more helpful than they might want me to be. I'm always happy to share my opinions, my experience, those sorts of things. And I've honestly found just the same from almost anyone else that I've met in the region, whether it's a fellow CEO that I happen to meet through a Maryland Tech Council event. Almost anything, if I were to ask them a question, I think they would unhesitatingly help me with. I think it's, and certainly I don't want to sort of make light of the question from giving you that answer. I think the first step is those companies really need to understand that they need help.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times it's easy enough to think that, you know, I know what I'm doing. I know how to execute a scientific plan. I know how to do a clinical trial. I know how to do toxicology. And so the business side of that should be pretty easy, right? Because I'm doing incredibly good science. And that's got to be the harder part. So the business part can't be that difficult. And that's not actually true, in my opinion. I think they're both incredibly hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're both different skill sets. And so I think it's, I think the first step is being able to take an honest look at yourself, an honest appraisal of yourself, your management team, and saying, what are we good at? What can we do? What can't we do? What do we need to do that we don't even know we need to do?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's then easy to start to reach out to people and ask them for help in that area. As a community, maybe then what we can do, assuming that hypothesis is correct, is to make that more apparent to people. You know, is to take some of the tools that maybe already exist, like the Maryland Tech Council has their venture mentoring service, and there are a lot of other programs around the state. I think it may be a matter of then, you know, helping those entrepreneurs sort of see what good looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the book Good to Great. If you don't know what great is, how do you ever get there? So I think it's starting to provide some examples of what those are, and additionally, you know, the things that lead to that, so that people can at least start to recognize, oh, wait a minute, you're right, there are these three things or these four things or these five things that I really do need help with or could do better. And then I think not only can the community and the Maryland Tech Council be helpful in that perspective, in that recognition, it then also can be helping and saying, okay, great, now that you realize you need these one or two things to help you become great, let's help you connect to those resources, those people that can help drive that change.
Mm-hmm. So I know that, like me, your academic training is in microbiology, so you've got some scientific background, but you've taken the business path forward. In your view, and often when you're talking to a scientific founder, let's say of a young biotech company, what do you tell them the role of the CEO is? What is the CEO's job for a company that's at that, we'll call it the second stage, and it's not a startup, they're going to need to raise some capital to get further along. What's the CEO's job at that point?
I think ultimately the CEO's job in any situation is value creation. And that seems simplistic, but it's actually very complex. At the end of the day, if you're going to request money from investors, take money from investors, have employees who count on you, have patients who count on you, you have to create value. Mm-hmm. You have to make that business more valuable. You have to make that product more valuable. You have to do that to be able to execute what you want to scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a cure for any disease, but unless you can demonstrate that you could actually bring it to market and manufacture it and get it into patients, that's not going to have any effect on anyone. And so I think for the CEO, it's sort of that understanding that your role is to define what value is for that company, and that may be influenced by your investors and other parties, and it's then to make sure that the company executes against it and creates value.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as you can keep increasing the value of the company, you're going to keep moving the company forward. You're going to keep having the opportunity to bring money in to keep the science progressing. And that's the hard part, particularly if you're a scientist who's a founder or CEO of a company, because your expertise, your training, those things are in doing the science.
Mm-hmm.
And doing very good science is not the same as creating value.
Mm-hmm. So kind of along those lines, and this is, you know, some spin on this I hear from a lot of founding CEOs. When you hear somebody say, if the rest of the world just knew what I know, they'd be lined up at my door. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's easy enough to say, if only. And I always use that expression because you'll hear it anywhere. If only this were different, the world would be perfect. If only this were different, my world would be better. If only this were different, whatever I'm working on would change the world. The problem is, if onlys don't occur. And so believing, hoping, or fantasizing that if the world knew what you were doing, things would be different doesn't change it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world doesn't care.
Right.
The world has a lot going on around it and can't sort of filter through the trillions of things going on to try and figure out that what you're doing is the thing that matters most. You, as the entrepreneur, as the scientist, as the leader, as the chief executive, whatever your role may be, your responsibility is to be able to communicate that message effectively to people so they're able to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find is if you can have a short, effective message which demonstrates how you're going to change the world, people really will want to listen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. So just to remind our listeners, this podcast is Capital M, and it's sponsored by the Maryland Technology Council. So our ask is, if you're interested, we'd like you to engage in the conversation, join in the discussion about capital markets and the challenges that we faced and the solutions that can help us get over those challenges. Take a look at our website, mdtechcouncil.com, and if you're not a member already, please join. So Brad, coming back to leadership a little bit and capital markets. So capital markets are a market, right? And there's a promotion and a marketing aspect to raising capital. We've talked about creating value and communicating that value proposition. What should a young company be thinking about with respect to promotion and that communication plan overall? When they're thinking about capital markets, and how should they be preparing for the capital markets?
I think the more strategic you are in thinking about that, the more successful you're going to be. At the end of the day, one of the things you have to realize is you're offering to sell a part of your company, a part of your soul, a part of your existence to this other third party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I've seen very frequently, or from an outside perspective, it's always very different when you're the one trying to raise the capital. But if I were answering that question as an outsider looking collectively at it, many times the approach to raising capital seems to be more an act of desperation than a preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really critical if you want to raise capital is to start with the end in mind. You know, what is the value inflection point, or what are the value inflection points where that investor is going to make a return on their money? And let's be honest, that's why someone invests in a company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean there aren't altruistic investors. It doesn't mean there aren't government grants. It doesn't mean there aren't maybe patient programs who might fund research. But ultimately, it's saying, you know, is someone going to make an investment decision based on the market value of this drug, how much revenue it's going to be able to generate, and when? Is it going to be based on the fact that this drug probably will be licensed by a third party, or our research portfolio would be licensed? So I think it's starting with that end and saying, all right, now I understand what the potential drivers of value are for that investor. And now I'm going to walk back down that value chain and create the milestones, figure out what I need to execute against, what I'm missing. And then it's saying, now I have a clear value proposition. Now, who would I want to partner with to create that value proposition?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge cross section of investors, venture capitalists, angel funders, strategic investors, companies. We could talk about licensing and that sort of situation. But I think there needs to be once you begin to understand what your end point is, you can start to think, well, who can help me achieve that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a product that's an orphan drug in a cardiovascular indication, ideally what you'd like to find is either a company or a venture capital partner that has experience in that area.
Right.
That has connections, who knows the key opinion leaders, who knows other companies that can help you, who's executed clinical trials in that area and knows what's failed and what hasn't failed, has people with regulatory experience. You'd ideally like to find the people who can bring something to the table in addition to the money they're going to give you.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of sources for that kind of information, right? There's sources like PitchBook and other data sources that you can go to find that kind of information.
Absolutely. And you can start in very broad swaths. You can look at people who regionally, you know, there. You can look at people who are interested in investing in the United States, only invested in interested in investing in Europe. You can look at those sort of things. You can look at narrow it down by area or stage of growth that they invest in. Mm-hmm. Some investors are only interested in growth capital. So unless you're a company with a product on the market generating $40 million a year, they don't have any interest in you.
Mm-hmm.
So by pursuing companies like that, that would never have an interest in your company, you're wasting everyone's time.
Right.
You're wasting your time. You're wasting their time. And so you can create a fairly selective list of candidates to start with, people mm-hmm. who invest in your therapeutic area, your stage of growth. And you can also think strategically. What are companies who might want to license this sort of technology going forward? Who are companies that have an inherent interest in this disease state?
Mm-hmm.
So as it turns out, my last company, two of our largest investors were Siemens and Roche.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them are traditional sort of venture capital firms, but both of them had reasons for being strategically interested in what we were doing and basically being able to have access to understanding what we were doing in the marketplace from a research and development perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things I think you can really sit down and think through and hopefully start with the best possible pool of people to make your top level of effort to pursue.
Right. So you've raised a fair amount of capital for companies here in Maryland, particularly your last company. How much of that capital came from Maryland?
None of it.
None of it. Interesting. So would you say that when we hear our members at the Tech Council talk about the struggle that they have with access to capital, is that a problem that's unique to this area, or is it a problem that's more unique to the company's abilities to go out and get that capital?
I think it's both. I don't want to trivialize it. I mean, the most important thing is access to capital is difficult everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter where you are, there's competition for capital.
Right.
There are some unique things about how, where you are geographically or whatever it may be, or even what industry you're in or what segment of the industry you're in can have an effect on. I think the people who are successful, one, have the focus that I described earlier, but two, they sit down and analyze what's different about the environment they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the particular challenges I face, and then how do I address them?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, an investor's job is to make money, and they're sort of agnostic on how they make money.
Mm-hmm.
They need to make money. And so there are some unique things here that I think it's important to address from the beginning that'll make someone more likely to be successful. You are likely to have fewer personal relationships here with investors.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a high concentration of venture capitalists who you're likely to run into at an event or at the Starbucks or have run a company with before. But that's fine. There are other ways you can deal with that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, possibly. There are fewer executives here who've de-risked investments for mm-hmm. these investors before. So they don't necessarily have a track record of success where the investor can say, oh, I know they've done this before, so I don't have to worry about them as much. But I think ultimately those are things you can address by realizing there are a probable shortcoming that you have and saying, okay, well, I understand that. Now how can I go out and find the best advisors to help me with that?
Right.
Whether they're other executives, whether they're attorneys, accountants, whatever it may be, and saying, now I've done an honest assessment of what my strengths and weaknesses are. How do I sort of go back and fill in my weaknesses and deal with that? Additionally, I think, as I've said before, there tends to be, in this area particularly, a less clear definition of what those valuable goals are to an investor.
Mm-hmm.
I think, from my perspective, we have a high concentration of scientists who go into these companies, and they're very focused on scientific goals and scientific milestones. but don't have the experience or the knowledge to say, but are those really the drivers of value that an investor is going to care about?
Mm-hmm.
And so in some cases, that may be finding an advisor who can sit down with you and help define those value inflection milestones that can then make the investment more appealing to someone.
Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting. Let's come back to something you said just a second ago. You talked about de-risking the business. So you've talked about the value proposition. You've talked a little bit about the leadership team and finding the right advisors. What other aspects of de-risking, and I bring it up because others that I've interviewed for this podcast have brought up the same point, de-risking the business for the investors?
I think you have to think about it from an investor's perspective. As I said before, an investor's purpose and their responsibility to their investors is to make money.
Mm-hmm.
They're not charities. They're not altruistic in nature. They've been given money to manage from people whose expectation is that they'll return more money to them in mm-hmm. exchange for that. And so as part of that, you have to realize that no matter how incredible your science is, no matter how much, as you said before, you're certain it will change the world if they only knew,
mm-hmm.
you have to realize that that has to cut through a tremendous amount of noise. If you were to sit down and talk to any venture capitalist or any other type of investor, they literally get hundreds of business plans just hurled at them on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of that desperation that I described before. It's, I must be making progress if I've emailed 10 pitch decks to someone today.
Right.
Right. That's, again, the confusion of activity with action. And I think the important thing is if you realize that they need to make money, that's literally their reason to exist, then you have to think about, okay, what's going to drive them in their decision-making process, right? They're mm-hmm. going to want to need to understand what those value inflection points are. If I need to make money, I'm going to put money in today, and then when am I going to get money back?
Mm-hmm.
How much money am I going to get back, and why am I going to get it back, right? They need to answer those basic questions of, is this company going to get sold? Is the product going to get licensed? Sort of the things we described earlier. Additionally, those are sort of the definite drivers. I mean, those are things that have to happen. But on the other side of things, you really have to try and they and everyone should want to try and manage the risks and minimize the risk that the product or the company is going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So they're easy ones, right? You run out of money and you can't do any more work. That's an easy thing to understand for failing. But what about scientific risk, right? What about de-risking things from a scientific perspective and saying, oh, wait a minute, I need to... There are two or three experiments that I need to do from a toxicology perspective to begin with to understand, you know, where there may be risks with this product. What about from a clinical trial perspective? I mean, we all do this and very carefully think through inclusion and exclusion criteria so that we've sort of pre-selected an ideal group of patients who are going to hopefully respond to this therapy, which again is a form of de-risking.
Mm-hmm.
Same from a regulatory perspective. Right? Having no idea what the regulators, and in this country, the FDA, are going to do with your product, no one wants to face that uncertainty. So that's why it's very helpful to have discussions with the FDA or have clear examples of products that are similar or clinical indications which are similar. But that's also the same thing from a management team. A management team who's never done these things before creates a risk for an investor.
Right.
Right? If you haven't proven that you could do this before, that you can carry a product through clinical validation, that you can carry it through regulatory filing, that you can think about even taking it beyond that. What about scaling up manufacturing?
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of times companies have gotten a product approved but yet had nothing to sell. That doesn't actually count as a win to most people.
Right, it's a bit of a challenge, right. So we're getting close to the end of our time here. I want to ask you, as the chairman of Maryland Life Sciences and vice chair of the Maryland Technology Council, what's the importance of an industry organization like, how does that help with some of the issues that we've discussed on this podcast today? And what other value, why are you so involved and why should others be involved?
I think the value is multifaceted. We are a relatively small but very important industry here in the state of Maryland and around the world. And I think the opportunity to bring new products to market and to help save patients' lives is incredibly important. I think the Maryland Tech Council really can provide a great opportunity to bring leaders together, to allow those people to network together, get to know each other. We are a geographically diverse community, and it's very easy to get it's incredibly easy to get buried in the day-to-day necessity of surviving. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's very hard to sort of lift your head up and not only think strategically, I was talking about before, but go out and meet your peers and talk to them and begin to engage in those conversations and understand how they can help you or provide you advice. I think the Maryland Tech Council does a great job of that and can continue to do that. I think additionally, as we've talked about before, there is a need for resources, someone who can help direct you and say, all right, I've gotten to the stage where I understand the science, but I don't know how to run a business.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tech Council provides services like the Venture Mentoring Service, where they can help to connect scientists or entrepreneurs with people with more or different experience that can help them be more likely to be successful in raising capital. I think additionally, it's important to have the Maryland Tech Council to represent us collectively as an industry. There are a lot of things that we need to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, in this state, we've talked about access to capital. The state, in many ways, does a great job of helping with that. There are things like the biotech tax credit that the Maryland Tech Council has been lobbying in favor of for years. There are a lot of regulatory issues that come up on an annual basis that the Maryland Tech Council helps to advocate for or to advocate against. So I think it's plays a critical role in bringing the community together and helping everyone to advance together, not only collectively, but individually.
Mm-hmm. Great. I couldn't agree more. So Brad, one last question. Is there anything that we haven't covered today that you would like to cover before we end?
I've covered it, but I think I'd at least like to summarize what I've said in different places. And that is, as an entrepreneur, if there were any sort of advice I could distill down and give to people in short bullet points, it would be establish clear and measurable goals. Identify what you need to accomplish the goals, such as the time, the money, or the people. Establish milestones and continually work to execute this plan and continue to improve it. Mm-hmm. And then every single day, not only execute it and improve it, but reach out and find people who can help you be successful.
Great. Brad, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for your support at the Tech Council. We really appreciate it. Appreciate your expertise. Again, this is Martin Rosendale, the Capital M Podcast, which is a podcast from the Maryland Technology Council focused on capital markets in Maryland. Our goal is to engage the conversation, elevate the challenges and the solutions to those challenges, and then use our collective influence to do something about it. If you want to learn more, come to our website at mdtechcouncil.com. Thank you very much.